Now, over the last few days, we've heard about some lockdowns in Europe and further afield due to COVID outbreaks springing up again. Two areas of Spain, Melbourne in Australia. Of course, Leicester was in the news this time last week when lockdown was lifted. Unfortunately for Leicester, that didn't happen. The World Health Organization, the WHO, has also published a report to say that the virus may be transmitted through the air. But meanwhile, we're still trying to get back to some kind of way of life that we knew before as the country tries to kickstart the economy with those, well, the regular announcements now. The one most up-to-date one was yesterday. But here for his weekly roundup, Professor Bertie Squire, who's Dean of Clinical Sciences and International Public Health at the Liverpool School of Tropical Medicine, also an honorary consultant in infectious diseases at the Royal here in Liverpool. Bertie, good morning. Welcome to the programme.
Morning, Tony. Morning, everyone.
The WHO yesterday said there's evidence that the virus can be transmitted through the air. And when I see these reports, and I'm sure when you see these reports, it's almost, you know, you feel a little crestfallen, really. But I guess also that's a recent discovery. It means it's always been like that. We just didn't know it. But it just kind of puts a speed bump in the way, doesn't it?
Yeah, so let me just start by saying the WHO didn't, what they said is that they were reconsidering the evidence. They didn't actually say that it was proven. And I thought maybe what we could do is start with what is generally thought about SARS-CoV transmission. SARS-CoV-2 is the virus that we're talking about with COVID-19. And it is thought to transmit in relatively large droplets. So these are larger than 10 microns in diameter, and they're generated through cough or sneeze or speaking or shouting or singing. We've talked about this before. And they contain infectious virus particles and can pass between people in one of two ways. The first is direct face up to up close face-to-face contact or contamination of a hand that then touches, you know, either direct onto the face or off a hand that then touches eyes, nose or mouth. And the second is through an aerosol. So that's temporary suspension of these larger droplets in the air, propelled between people within a couple of meters of each other. The thing that there's now debate about, or there's been debate about actually all along, but uncertainty about, is the extent to which the smaller droplets that are generated at the same time as the larger droplets also contain infectious virus. So the smaller droplets, smaller than 10 microns, don't fall to the ground or onto surfaces as quickly, and they can stay suspended in the air in air currents and theoretically cause transmission over much greater distance.
Right, okay. So, theoretically is the key word there, isn't it?
That's the key word. And basically, what the evidence that has been... So we know that that does happen with other infections, such as measles and tuberculosis. So the theory is there. But what's now being asked is really, what is the evidence about how much of a problem that is?
We're always learning, aren't we? You know, we're always monitoring what's gone on, and we see the curve. And in the United States at the moment, you know, the curve seems to be fattening rather than falling away, which is a major worry. But there's a lot of people like yourselves and other scientists behind the scenes as well, learning something new every day. And once that conversation and that discussion starts, that's when these other ideas, these woulda, coulda, shoulda ideas come out. But as a member of the public, this is where we start to get a little bit twitchy with it. And we think, sure, this just isn't going away.
Sure. So my personal view is that transmission by these smaller aerosolized droplets is possible, but probably not a major route of transmission. If it really was a major route of transmission, then A, the R naught of this infection, remember we talked about this at the beginning, would be far higher than the two or three that we heard at the beginning of transmission. It would be much more like 12 or 13 that we have with measles. So we would have seen a much steeper rise in the number of cases and fatalities. So I think it's less likely. And the other reason I think it's less likely is that we do have evidence that track and trace methodology, where people self-isolate, has been effective. We have that evidence in places like South Korea and Singapore. And if there was really significant aerosol transmission on the air currents, then that track and trace methodology wouldn't be so effective. Yeah. So for me, the take-home message is that the currently recommended measures, the wearing face coverings and preferring to meet in well-ventilated situations such as the outdoors, that still holds, because that will reduce the possibility of transmission by both large and small droplets.
So what are we learning from regional outbreaks here in the UK? I mentioned Leicester before, a couple of pubs closed this week as well because there was a little bit of an outbreak that was kicking off. And of course, in Europe, is this simply down to the easing of restrictions that we're seeing these outbreaks again?
I guess in a way it is, but it's more that the easing of the, let me just start again. It's more that because we now have very low transmission in the community, it's almost uncovering or making more obvious what the hotspots are. Right. So we're learning more about the kinds of situations in which the virus transmits most easily. Before the lockdown, when there was generalized community transmission, it was difficult to distinguish any particular hotspots. But now that community transmission is really low, it's possible to detect outbreaks, and they're occurring where you would expect. So they're occurring where there are larger numbers of people who work together or live together in relatively crowded conditions, and where social distancing is not easy, and perhaps where air ventilation is quite restricted. So if I'm thinking here of some meat processing plants. Mm. I'm thinking of the Melbourne outbreak, where you've got people living in close proximity in tower blocks. So that's what we're seeing, is that as the generalized community transmission is really low, then the hotspots become easier to see, detect and respond to.
And of course, as this has all panned out and as it's been moving along, let's take, you know, the start of March or the middle of March, for example, where not as many people were washing their hands, certainly not as many people were gelling their hands and social distancing was not in place. It is now. More of us wash our hands, more of us gel our hands. We are generally, as a nation, we are a lot cleaner, and that can only be a good thing.
Yes, I couldn't agree more. I think it is sensible that we continue to do these things. I guess the difficulty is, though, that it does still feel a bit strange, doesn't it? This thing about being aware of how far away you are from somebody. Mm. I think the washing hands and wearing of masks is becoming a little bit more second nature. But we are instinctively, we want to be closer to, you know, certainly people we know. And I think that'll take a lot longer to get used to. And I hope we don't have to get used to it, you know, too far into the future.
Indeed. I miss shaking hands with people. Do you? I really do miss shaking hands with people.
Yeah, I do, to be honest. I mean, we got quite good in Africa of the elbow bump or the foot bump because of Ebola. But it's not quite the same, is it?
No, it's not. It's not. You're right. And we're going to grab you for a crumb of comfort in a second, because we do like those. But how important is treatment, vaccines and drugs, etc.? Of course, it's really important. But is it the only way that we will get rid of COVID? Because we've heard people talk about we're going to have to live alongside this for years and just manage it. Is the only way really a vaccine to get rid?
Yeah, so we know from controlling other infectious diseases that ideally we need a really good set of all of the tools. So we need good diagnostic tests, which are rapid, easy to use, fast turnaround, good treatment, and a vaccine. But a really effective vaccine is the main game changer. We've seen that with other virus diseases that you think about. So think of things like smallpox, measles, polio, they've all really been controlled by a vaccine. And none of those three have an effective treatment. But I think our issue here is that we're unlikely to get to an effective vaccine in a single step. And even if we do, we know that there's this thing called vaccine hesitancy, where some people are not willing to be vaccinated. And we also know that there are some diseases that we've made progress with, but without a vaccine, such as tuberculosis and HIV. Mm. And with both of those, we've achieved the control with good diagnosis and treatment. So my view is, along the way towards a good vaccine, we need to get better and better at diagnosing and treating, and ideally treating really early before people get ill. And developing evidence for early treatment is what our colleagues at the University of Liverpool are aiming for. And you heard Tom Fletcher, my colleague, talk about the Agile trial yesterday.
We did indeed.
So we need all of it, really, ideally. And I think if we can develop all three of those tools, the diagnostics, the treatment and the vaccines, then our chances of getting to a point where life is more normal and much greater is much greater.
We're going to tie up our conversation now, and we always look forward to your crumb of comfort just before we finish. And you've done this since week one, really. So what's this week's, Bertie?
Okay, I found this one tricky this week because there's lots of good news about, isn't there, with the easing of lockdown, and including the fact that my barber was open late on Tuesday evening and I was able to get my first proper barber haircut. But to be honest, I'm going to return to a much more serious crumb of comfort and mention again the oxygen plant that I mentioned at Queen Elizabeth Central Hospital in Blantyre in southern Malawi, because it took a huge effort to get it in place over the last 3 months. And actually, it's really functional, and it couldn't have been more timely. It's just become fully functional just as the first serious cases of COVID-19 are occurring there. They haven't had them in Africa till now. And in the last week since I last spoke to you, it's actually saved the lives of four serious cases who've successfully been supported. Great. So for me, that's a really serious crumb of comfort, and I'm really glad that it's happened.
Great stuff. Bertie, we'll talk to you next week. Thank you very much indeed, and good luck. And I'm sure you're very, very pleased with the haircut. It's been a long time coming.
We're all so grateful for the simple things now, aren't we?
Oh, we certainly are. I get the haircut. I had the dentist yesterday.
Did you go?
Yeah.